Well, as mentioned, we're looking at the topic of money today, and because it's a topical sermon, I thought we'd open it up for questions at the end. But we preach on money about once a year here at Erwood Anglican, and the reason we preach on money each year is that money is not our focus here at Erwood Anglican. There are some churches that have two sermons every Sunday. They have the main sermon and then a separate five-minute sermon on giving right before the offertory plate is passed around. Kind of makes you wonder where their focus lies. The thing we focus on every week is that God is our ultimate treasure. But the fascinating thing I learnt when preparing for this topic is that Jesus preached about money all the time. Now, his sermons were never about how his disciples were to give him money. One of the things that's clear from Jesus' life was that he was not a lover of money. Jesus died owning nothing but the clothes on his back. So if you're new or visiting today, please know we are not asking for your money, just like Jesus never asked people for money. But Jesus did preach about money a lot. Over a quarter of his parables in Luke's gospel are about money or possessions. Over a quarter. And if we add to that a half a dozen other passages, like the rich young ruler who was told to sell everything, the old lady with the two copper coins, or paying taxes to Caesar, we find that Jesus spoke more about money than any other topic, save perhaps for himself. And the reason Jesus preached about money so much is because how we handle money lies at the heart of what it means to live as a Christian. You see, money is not just an indicator of our relationship with God. It's not even the biggest indicator. Money is a direct indicator to our relationship with God. How we relate to our money is a direct indicator to how we relate to God. And this is why Jesus is happy to tell this parable in front of a huge crowd. Jesus wants everyone to know, whether they're a mature believer or a hardened skeptic, he wants everyone to know that how we handle our money lies at the heart of what it means to live as a Christian. And he does so in this passage by pointing out three ways in which the love of money, in which greed, wreaks havoc on our lives. And as your sermon outline shows, these points are that greed makes us blind, greed turns us into slaves, and greed distorts reality. Greed makes us blind, greed turns us into slaves, and greed distorts reality. And this is why Jesus speaks about money so much, because the love of money ruins a person. It ruins a person. And so if we would rather not be blind, enslaved fools, then let's look together at how Jesus says we should handle our money. Well, our passage begins with an impromptu request. Luke 12:13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So a random stranger is looking to Jesus for help. His brother has control of his parents' estate and he wants his fair share. And now he's come to Jesus, presumably because Jesus is a teacher. It was not uncommon to go to the religious authorities for legal judgments back in Jesus' day. And Jesus seems like he would be a fair arbitrator. So this request is not completely out of left field. But Jesus sees where this request is coming from. And he uses this opportunity to warn people about the love of money. He says, verse 15, "Watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." Now, why does Jesus say, "Watch out for greed, be on your guard against greed"? Well, it's because greed blinds people to our greed. In the movie Shazam, one of the main characters asks, "If you could choose a superpower and you could choose between flight or invisibility, which superpower would you choose?" Well, greed has the superpower of invisibility. What I mean is, Jesus never says, "Watch out for adultery," or "Be on your guard against theft." The reason being, people know when they're committing adultery or stealing. No one ever said, "Whoops, you're not my spouse," or "Whoops, where did that $10,000 come from?" Right? Most sins are pretty conspicuous. Greed is the one sin that hides itself. And the reason it hides itself is pretty obvious. The human heart has a tendency to love money. You see, while few will admit it, most humans want to spend our money however we want. Or others have a slightly different take on greed. They want to accumulate, save money, however they want. And because the human heart has a natural love of money, we will always find excuses to keep spending or keep saving the way we think is best for ourselves. Now, if you take offense at this, then let me ask, Have we ever found ourselves saying things like, "Oh, I would never treat money like that person. She spends way more on makeup than I do. He spends way too much on alcohol. I can't believe how often she goes to the hairdresser. You'll never guess how much he paid for those golf clubs." Or then there's the savers. Why doesn't he just get off his backside and get himself a mortgage? Or she just lacks the ambition to take something, to make something of herself. Do these kind of statements sound familiar? If so, that's our heart trying to justify its greed. That's how greed works. It blinds us to its very presence by telling us to compare ourselves to those richer or greedier than us. Right? This is why most Aussies, if asked, will say they're not rich. Right? The vast majority of Aussies will declare they are not rich, even though Australia ranks second in the world for the highest average wealth per adult. We are the second richest country in the world based on average adult wealth, being beaten only by banking giant Switzerland. Right? Greed blinds us to its very presence in our hearts by comparing ourselves to those who are richer or greedier than us. And so Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. So friends, if we are ever going to beat greed, like Jesus wants us to, we need to admit that our heart has a natural tendency towards loving money. We need to admit that we spend too much on clothes or coffee or music or our mobile plans or our super. Right? The first step to fixing a problem is realizing there is one. So watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Well, look, the second lesson Jesus gives us on greed is in the second half of verse 15. He says, a person's life does not consist in the abundance of their possessions. So once greed has successfully blinded us to its presence, it starts to take over. Right? Money works the same way any idol works. It becomes our master. And that master demands that it is the most important thing, the abundance of possessions, and that we serve it rather than God. And we see this in the three cardinal virtues of the Christian life. What do I mean? See, everything that a Christian does and says is summarized by faith, hope, and love, the three cardinal virtues. The thing about greed is it takes control of all three. You see, instead of placing our faith, hope, and love in God, greed says we need to find those things in money. I mean, think about it. Why don't we give more? It's because of faith, hope, and love. So firstly, we don't give more because greed has taken control of our faith. It makes us afraid that we won't have enough left over. Greed makes us question whether God will actually care for us financially if we give the way the Bible calls us to give. Right? Greed enslaves our faith. Second, we don't give more because greed has taken control of our hope. Okay, so hope has all to do with security or control. The reason I don't give more is because I don't feel secure unless I have at least $20,000 in the bank. My hope is in my bank balance or my super or paying off my mortgage. So faith, hope, and the third is love. We don't give more because greed has taken control of our love. Rather than looking at the unbelievable needs out there and showing sympathy for the poor, we instead spend our money on what we love. How easy we find it to eat at nice restaurants or have the latest smartphone or buy a coffee each day and ignore the poor. Now notice what's happening in each of those categories. Greed has taken over. And greed will come up with any number of excuses needed to keep us under its control, to keep us sacrificing for it. The problem, though, is that like any idol, greed is not a benevolent, a caring master. It is a malevolent, a vindictive one. So firstly, no matter what you do, it will never be enough. And secondly, if we fail that master, it will make us feel dreadful. Friends, Jesus is the only master that doesn't demand we sacrifice to make him happy. Instead, he sacrificed for us. Now, if that hasn't sunk in yet, I want us to meditate for a second on what exactly Jesus sacrificed. Right? He sacrificed everything. So imagine for a second taking all your possessions, all your clothes, all your furniture, your phone, your house, and then add to that all your relations, your brothers, your sisters, your parents, your kids, and then add to that your friends, your health, your abilities, and why not throw in your sanity as well? Imagine taking everything that makes up you and destroying it all. Because that's what Jesus did on the cross. He gave his all for you. Right? Jesus is the only master who says, it's not about what you can do for me. It's about what I've done for you. So remember, a person's life does not consist in the abundance of their possessions. It consists in serving a master who won't punish us for failing him. For Jesus is the master who took that punishment himself. So, greed makes us blind. Greed turns us into slaves. The third and final warning Jesus gives us in this passage is that greed distorts reality. And Jesus explains this with the parable of a farmer whose land produced a bumper crop. And Jesus calls this guy a fool in verse 20. Now that word is the same word used in the book of Proverbs to describe a person who has rejected God's definition of reality. A fool is someone who rejects God's words about how his world works. So to explain what I mean, let me use an example from science. Take gravity, for example. If I were to take an expensive piece of china and drop it from a height, it will act according to the laws of gravity. It will fall rapidly and shatter upon impact. Right? Only a fool would drop an expensive piece of china from a height and expect everything to be okay. In the same way, anyone who rejects God's version of reality, as outlined in his word, is a fool. So in the book of Proverbs, the adulterer is a fool. The hot-headed man is a fool. The sluggard is a fool. Anyone who says, yes, God's word says this, but I'm going to do that, is a fool, according to the Bible. And Jesus uses that same title for this man. So what is it that makes this man so foolish? Well, it's not that his fields produced a bumper crop. That's actually God's doing. It has nothing to do with him. Furthermore, investing the money his fields made back into his business by building bigger barns is also not actually wrong. The Bible calls that wise stewardship. So what does the man do wrong? We see it in verse 19. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. This man is a fool because his ultimate treasure is material possessions. It's food, it's drink, it's self-indulgence and partying. Right? We need to remember that money is not evil. The phrase, money is the root of all evil, is a misquote. The Bible never says that. Money is simply the bits of paper or metal we have established as our currency. The only reason money is significant to us at all is because we exchange that currency for what we value. And what this guy values is relaxing, eating, drinking, and having fun. And Jesus calls him a fool because those things are worthless trinkets compared to the infinite value of God. Right? As we teach here every week, God is our ultimate treasure. And the way to live with God as our ultimate treasure is to use our money in such a way that shows God is our ultimate treasure. Verse 21, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. Right? To be rich towards God is to show with our riches that he is our ultimate treasure and not earthly things. I'll say that again. To avoid being labeled a fool by Jesus is to be rich towards God. And to be rich towards God is to show with our riches that God is our ultimate treasure, not earthly things. So this leaves just one last question. How do we do this? How do we combat being blind, enslaved fools when it comes to handling our money? Well, friends, it's by putting our faith, our hope, and our love in God. So let's look at these three cardinal virtues as we close. To begin with, we put our faith in God with our money by giving more. More to church, more to mission, more to charity, more to neighbors in need. And the more we give, the more our faith grows. Now, the starting point, according to the Bible, is 10%. If you are new to this church, please understand that while the New Testament doesn't specify amount Christians are to give, it declares that Christians should be more generous than Old Testament Israel. And Old Testament Israel were commanded to give 10%. So if you're new to this church, or perhaps you've rejected this teaching until now, can I challenge you to at least test your faith in God, if not grow it? Say to God, I'm going to start giving 10% to you, Lord, as of this week, and I pray you will increase my faith by showing me that you will look after my needs. For those who already are giving 10% or perhaps more, how can we increase our faith? Well, here's one thing Deb and I started doing just this year. We have increased our giving by 1%. And we're going to see how it goes across this year. Now, if we start to go backwards, we can readjust. But our prayer is that when we get to the end of 2019, we will find that we haven't actually missed that extra 1%. And the increase in faith that we're praying for in that will hopefully help us up it by another 1% in 2020. And we'll see how that goes. But the first way to avoid being blind, enslaved fools is to put our faith in God, not in money. A second way is to put our hope in God, not in money. The man in this parable put all his future hope in his financial security. And friends, it is all too easy in our Western culture to say, oh, look, I'll give more after I have a good safety net in the bank. I'll give more after I've paid my mortgage down a bit. I'll give more after I've topped up my super. As Jim Elliot, that famous missionary to Ecuador, once said, he is no fool. He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Now, I'm not saying that savings and mortgages and super are wrong. What I'm saying is may our giving show that they are not our ultimate treasure. And finally, we avoid being blind, enslaved fools by ensuring our love is in the right place. And this is wonderfully summarized by Jesus in the two great commandments, isn't it? Love God and love your neighbor. The way we love God more is by giving more of our time to him. Not necessarily our money, but our time. And this is not an arbitrary exercise, all right? Reading the Bible and praying each day is not arbitrary. The reason we spend time reading God's word and praying every day is because we are on a quest. It is a lifelong quest to allow God's infinite glory and grace towards us in Jesus to overwhelm our hearts. And the reason we want it to overwhelm our hearts is so that we can say with the Apostle Paul, I consider everything rubbish compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ. Friends, we love our neighbor through giving more of our money. We love God through giving of our time. We love our neighbor through giving our money. Like everything, we need the Spirit's help in this, but our goal is not to make ourselves merry by our food or our drink or our relaxing or our partying. Rather, we want the Spirit to make us merry through making others happy with our generosity. Friends, like I said at the start, my goal today is not to ask you to put more in the offertory plate. We're actually ahead of budget last time I checked. My goal today is to make us think about our relationship to money. For if we let our money control our faith, our hope, and our love, then we are the blind, enslaved fools, Jesus says. My prayer is that we would rather control our money. And we do that by ensuring our faith, hope, and love